I have to start out and just admit, make a confession to you that I stole this sermon from another preacher. I did. A preacher who's much more experienced than I. And I don't do this often. In fact, I haven't done this yet here. This is the first time. But from time to time, I do like to take a sermon that a more experienced preacher has done. Not as a way of a shortcut, because it's not a shortcut. But it will help me to learn better how to preach. And I just wanted to admit that because I didn't want to feel guilty going through this sermon, making you think that I had come up with all this material myself. I heard this sermon, and I just thought it's a wonderful sermon. And I just wanted to share it with you, my version of it. Isaiah, he tells the Israelites that they will have an attitude toward idols to say to them, be gone, or get away, or literally, go out. The old translations say, get thee hence. This is very similar to what Jesus said. In Matthew chapter 4, we read there the third temptation to Satan. And Satan had taken him up on the mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and said, bow down and worship me, I'll give you these. Jesus said, simply in the New American Standard Version, go, Satan. It's a very curt and confident dismissal of sin and of Satan. And it is the attitude that we must have if we are going to overcome sin. And that's what we're going to be talking about. This is a lesson on rejecting sin and on hating sin. So we're going to talk about the command on God's desire that we reject and detest sin. We are going to look at our ability to do that, and we're going to talk about how we can learn to do that. So we start off here in Isaiah 30. The Israelites were rebellious children, and they were trusting in Egypt, not in God. They wanted to go to Egypt and bring their riches to Egypt, to pay Egypt to help them against their enemy, the Assyrians. And Isaiah is telling them, trust in God. He's all powerful. He can deliver you. But they're tired of hearing about the Holy One of Israel. They say, get away. We don't want to hear about that anymore. But God is merciful. He wants to bless them. He cannot bless them unless they come to Him, but He wants to. And so, He is positive. And this is a positive passage. Not so much a command, but more a positive statement that they will do this. In verse 22, Isaiah says, and you will defile your graven images overlaid with silver and your molten images plated with gold. You will scatter them as an impure thing and say to them, be gone. I really like that verse. We have this attitude of throwing sin away, scattering it. And that's what that means when it says scatter. It means throw it away. Cast it away from you. You know, sometimes you might drop a piece of food in your car, like a piece of bread or something, and it stays there and you forget about it because it's stuck under your seat. And time goes on, days, weeks go by, and you smell something in your car. So you break down and decide to actually clean it out. You get down and you're searching, and you're searching, and you're cleaning, and you find under your seat this piece of bread. And there's no telling how long that thing's been under your car. It's moldy. It's maggot infested. It smells. It's green. It's disgusting. It's putrid. What are you going to do with that? You have no use for that. You're certainly not going to take a bite of it. You're not going to put it back under your seat for safekeeping. You're going to throw it away. You have no use for it whatsoever. And that should be our attitude toward sin. Sin is disgusting. We throw it away. It has nothing in our lives, no place in our lives, no value, whatever. 700 years before Isaiah wrote this, approximately, Moses in Deuteronomy is giving his speeches. Turn to chapter 7. And he is telling the Israelites they're going to be entering the land, and he's warning them of things that they will be tempted about. And he knows they're going to be tempted about the great riches that are there, because in the wilderness, all those years, they didn't have great riches. And here they're going to be entering this land of abundant riches. And they're going to be confronted and see all these idols that are overlaid with gold and silver. And if nothing else, they just might want that gold or silver, even if they don't want to worship the idol. You see, an idol was made of stone or of wood, but it was overlaid or plated with gold or silver. And look at what Moses says in verse 25. The graven images of their gods you are to burn with fire. You shall not covet the silver or the gold that is on them, nor take it for yourselves, or you will be snared by it. For it is an abomination to the Lord your God. You shall not bring an abomination into your house and like it come under the ban. You shall utterly detest it, and you shall utterly abhor it, for it is something banned, or it is an accursed thing, New King James. You see this attitude to have towards sin and toward these idols? He's telling these Israelites, you are not to have these idols. But that's not the end of it. You're not to have them, you're not to want them. And that's not the end of it. You're not to have them, you're not to want them, but you are to hate them with a passion in the very depths of your soul. As much as you can hate something, you hate those idols. That's powerful. And that's the attitude that we must have towards sin if we are going to fully overcome it. You think about sins that you resist, whether it's a sin of anger or a sin of lust, sin of the tongue, or what be it. There are levels of resistance that you have to that sin. It might be that you resist it on a very superficial level. You don't do it and you deny yourself of it, but boy, you want to do it. Oh man, you wish you could do it. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. And then there's a level deeper where you don't do it and you don't even want to do it. It's not really a temptation for you. But you're not necessarily offended when you hear it or see it. You don't necessarily hate it. I think this might be sort of a lot of people's attitude toward profanity. It's something that we don't really care to use, but we're not really offended when we hear it. We don't turn our TVs off or make sure that what we watch doesn't contain that kind of language. And we should be more careful about that. But I tell you, the level we ought to try to get to, the level we must get to, is to hate the sin, to be completely offended by it. It's disgusting. You cannot stand to see it. You cannot stand to hear it. You cannot stand to be around it. You want to make sure and put yourself around people who don't talk and act that way. And you just do everything in your power to make sure you don't surround yourself with that sort of thing. Or enter it into your brain and your entertainment that you choose or you pay to watch. That is a level that we must try to get to. And I'm talking to myself. We all need to strive to grow in that area. I was talking about that rotten piece of bread. Well, I can't hardly even talk about that without feeling a sense of disgust. When I talk about a green, moldy, maggot-infested piece of bread, that just makes me feel disgusted. And it might even make you sick to your stomach just to think about that. Is that how you feel about sin? When you think about sin, is it something that's putrid? It's something you cannot stand to even think about, that you don't want to get anywhere near? Moses is telling the Israelites not just how not to sin, but he's telling them how to feel about sin. It's not just the physical don't do it. It's how do you think, how do you feel about it in your heart and in your emotions? You hate it. And if people would reject Satan like this, he'd be out of business. He has no choice but to flee from us. If you resist the devil, he will flee from you, James 4 and verse 7. He will. One more passage I don't have on the outline is in the New Testament, a very well-known passage in Romans 12 and verse 9. Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. And I like that one because it gives the emphasis not just on the abhorring, but on the clinging to what is good. And we'll get into that a little bit more later. So we see clearly God's desire that we resist and that we absolutely abhor sin. Now let's talk about our ability to do that. You know, you might be thinking, well, okay, Mr. Preacher, I really like the way you're talking up there about hating sin and resisting sin, but I can't do that. I mean, that's just hard. I cannot overcome that. There are things in my life that somebody else doesn't go through. Don't forget, no temptation has overtaken you but such as is common to man. Common to man. There's nothing you've gone through that somebody else has not gone through and overcome. But smart people will say, and you hear people in society say these sorts of things. Well, a person is born with a genetic predisposition to a certain lifestyle or a certain They won't call it sin. So, for example, this person that is homosexual, he was born that way. He does not have a choice. He's just being what he naturally is. I even watched a special on TV about how these little children, they want to be the opposite gender. When they're little bitty, little boys want to be little girls. Little girls want to be little boys. And they get older and it becomes more and more something they want to do. And the whole point of this show was how the parents should support their kids and let them be what they are naturally. This little boy thinks he's a little girl. Well, if that's what he thinks he is, if that's the way he was born, well, let's support him and give him operations and give him hormones to let him be what he naturally is. The only reason I'm saying this is because our society lends into the idea that if you're born with a certain tendency, that you can't do much about it, and nobody should keep you from doing anything about it. Now, I do think there is some truth to the idea that a person is born with a tendency for a certain sin or lifestyle. A person can no doubt be born with a tendency to be homosexual. But that means that person is going to have to try that much harder not to be that way. He can overcome it. And not only can he or she overcome it, but can learn to absolutely detest that sin and that lifestyle. And so we all have things. You struggle with things that maybe the person sitting next to you doesn't struggle with. That just means you're going to have to work harder than they do to overcome that particular sin. God is faithful. He will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation, He will provide a way of escape. And look in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. The one I just quoted was from chapter 10, a well-known passage. And this one is also well known from chapter 6. You think about these Corinthians and all the problems they had and how they had come out of idolatry and they had come out of sin. They came out of the world, and I mean they came out of the world. And look at what he says in verse 9. Or do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor effeminate, nor homosexuals, nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. Verse 11, such were some of you, but you were washed, but you were sanctified, but you were justified in the name of our Lord Jesus and in the Spirit of our God. So they were in the very pits of sin, in the very depths of sin in that lifestyle, and they overcame it. And there, I can imagine that in this audience, many of you have overcome some very horrible sins. And you probably thought to yourself, I can't do this at one point. You probably thought, there's no way I can overcome that sin. I know I think in my life of sins that I thought, I just can't do it. But you can. And you look back and you know that you did, and you say, how did I do that? Well, you did it because you committed your life to Christ. And you prayed for strength. And you devoted your life to something worthwhile. We can do that. One man said, no degree of temptation justifies any degree of sin. So we completely have the ability to do that. Well, now we're going to spend a good bit of time talking about how to learn to go about detesting sin and rejecting it. But specifically, we're looking at how to learn to just hate it. How do you get to that level? How do you get to that point? The first thing is stop cultivating the desire to sin. I want to give you an illustration. Let's say that you have a diet where there are certain foods that you cannot eat, either because you're allergic to it or you just don't want to eat something that's very unhealthy like that. And so you just made up your mind, okay, I'm not going to eat chocolate cake or steak or fried foods or what have it, what be it. And here you go to a restaurant. You're sitting in a restaurant and you open up the menu, and you see a picture of that food that you cannot have. You don't intend to order it. You're not going to order it. But boy, doesn't it look tasty. You think about that, and you smell it in the room, and you see a server walking by carrying that very thing that you cannot have. And you just look at it, and you smell it, and you think, oh, man, I sure wish I could have that. That is some people's attitude towards sin. We deny ourselves the partaking in it, but we sure like to think about how great it would be if we could do it. Oh boy, do we love that. We even get jealous of people who get to do it. How come I don't get to do it? God, how come this is sinful? I sure wish I could do that. Wouldn't that be nice? And we maybe fantasize and think of how wonderful it would be and picture yourself doing it, partaking in that very corrupt sin that you so admire. You see, sometimes we're very happy to go about our way merrily cultivating the like for sin. Don't do that. You cannot learn to hate sin if you are cultivating the like for it. So that's kind of a starting point. And of course, James 1, 14 and 15. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away and enticed by his own lust or desire. And when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is accomplished, brings forth death. Well, it all starts with the lust. Lusting, desire, wanting that sin. The second way we can learn how to hate sin is to learn to appreciate and admire the ways of God. I just really love this thought. David, in Psalm 27 and verse 4, he said, "One thing I have desired from the Lord, that I shall seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord, and to meditate in His temple." What did David mean when he said to behold the beauty of the Lord? Was he talking about going up to heaven and looking at God and thinking how beautiful God is? Not in that passage. He's not talking about heaven. He's talking about here on earth in his worship to God, whether it be public or private, dwelling and meditating on how wonderful and beautiful the spiritual and moral nature of God is. You think about how beautiful God is. And you fall in love with that. And you think about His power and His sovereignty and His love and His grace and His mercy and all these wonderful attributes of God that we can hardly fathom. And then you think about Jesus, who manifests the Father to us, 1 John 1, verses 1 and 2, and John 14, verses 8 and 9. Philip, you know, Jesus tells Philip, basically, when you see me, you see the Father. So we think about Jesus and we follow His footsteps and we study about His life and His character and His strength and His integrity, and we grow to admire that and want to be more like that. But let me suggest this to you. That's also something you must cultivate. So while you're busy not cultivating sin and the like for it, also be busy cultivating your love and your admiration for the ways of God. Some of us, the first time you have tried a food, whatever kind of food, maybe something hot, maybe something healthy, you didn't like it. And you tried it again, and you still didn't like it, but you liked it a little more than you did the first time. And eventually, after you tried it many times, you start to develop a taste for it. You cultivated a liking for it. And eventually, it's one of maybe your favorite foods. That's what we must do with God. We cultivate this admiration for Him. And as you grow closer to Christ and closer to God, and you strengthen yourself in Christ, then you will grow to learn to appreciate more and more about God. And the further you do that, the further you get away from sin, and the more and more you hate sin, and you will be stronger against Satan. The third way to learn to hate sin is to learn the consequences of sin. Sin is ugly. Sin wrecks people's lives. And you see in the Bible, all through the Bible, the consequences of sin, Adam and Eve in the garden. And they are cast out of the garden, and work is made extremely hard, and there's pain in childbirth. Or you think about the Israelites and what Moses told them in Deuteronomy 28, and what eventually did happen as a result of their sin, that their enemies would come and would defeat them, that they would not rain, that the ground would not produce fruit, that even the sweetest, most kindest of the Israelites would become mean and spiteful and murderous. That is a result of sin. And it is sin. Often sin is its own consequence. We look at how relationships are destroyed. I see in my own life, I know of someone that is an alcoholic. And his whole life has been destroyed. And he's in prison and his family is suffering. That's sin that did that. I see someone who is addicted to drugs and does not know how to take care of his family, and he cannot do a thing for his family because all he needs is these drugs. Sin did that. You see, people's families torn to pieces and kids suffering because of this, because of divorce and adultery. Sin did that. Illness, death, wars. Sin does all of that. And then on a more personal level, we see sin in our own lives. And we think about the effects of sin that we've seen, that we have experienced. As a result of our own sin, we have experienced depression and unhappiness and guilt and shame and an inability to perform in the workplace and carry on normal relationships with people to the point that it almost brought you to your knees and you overcame it. Be thankful that you overcame it. Because sin will destroy anyone it gets a hold of. You want something to hate? Hate sin. And to learn to hate sin, hate the consequences of it. Next time you're tempted, stop and think for a moment. Just think about, what is this going to cause to happen in my life? Think of the consequences it's going to bring. You know, the only people I can think of that, well, the only people that never experienced the consequences of sin before sinning would be Adam and Eve. They wouldn't have known what death was or what pain was. And so you'd like to think, you know, I'd like to think, if I could just go back to the garden, if I could just go there and see Eve and here she's about to eat that forbidden fruit and say, Eve, don't do that. It's gonna cause death. Death? What is death? It's going to cause suffering. What is suffering? That she has never experienced that. You and I have experienced and we have seen all of these things. Yet we decide to eat our own forbidden fruit when we have already seen what sin will do. It's sort of like you're walking behind somebody and you see this person walking and here he comes close to a tree and the branch is low and he whacks his head on the branch and knocks him flat on his back. And you say, man, he needs to be careful. And then you go along and you're walking by that same tree and you're not paying attention and you whack your head on the same branch. Why didn't you learn from what you saw not to do that? We don't learn sometimes. We see the consequences all around us of sin, yet we still decide to give in to it. And I wasn't even mentioning there the eternal consequences of sin. What are the wages of sin? Death. What? Whom does sin separate us from? From the Lord. Your iniquities have separated you from the Lord, Isaiah 59 and verse 2. And in eternal destruction, Matthew 25 and verse 46. All that is brought about by sin. I want to wrap this up with an illustration. This may take just a minute. But most of us hate snakes. I mean, the average person, if he sees a snake, whatever kind of snake it is, he's going to kill that snake. Or have somebody else kill it. Let's imagine that you have a snake living in your backyard. And this is not just any snake. This is a poisonous snake. This is a rattler. A 6-foot mean rattler. And you see him in your backyard. You know he lives there. You see him slithering around in the bushes and shrubbery and going underneath your house or whatnot. And for some odd reason, when you have the opportunity to kill him from time to time, you tell yourself, no, I'm not going to kill that snake. I'm going to let him live in my backyard. You go on about your way, and daily when you come out your back door, you know, you watch your step. You make sure you're not going to step on that snake. You make sure he's not anywhere close by. But you just keep telling yourself, it's okay. That snake's not going to get me. I'm going to watch him. Well, if you keep doing that, eventually you know what's going to happen. That snake is going to get you. He's going to bite you, and it's going to hurt. It might even kill you. And so people's attitude towards sin is sometimes, I want it right in my back door. I want it right here at arm's length. I'm not going to repudiate it. I'm not going to send it away from me. I'm not going to throw it away. I want to keep it kind of right there. I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to kind of keep it close. I'm not going to let it into my heart, though. But it's okay. I'll watch out. I won't fall into the sin. Sure you will. You know what you got to do with that snake? You got to chop his head off. Then you got to cut him up into little pieces. I was talking to Heather Way the other day, and she was telling me of when she was a child, her father, David, went and found a copperhead or some kind of snake and chopped it up into little pieces and brought her out there and said, I want you to avoid snakes. That's what they look like. And she said, I don't have any idea what a snake looks like after looking at that. It was just a mess. Well, we need to take sin, and we don't need to just ignore it or sort of just let it linger in our backyard. We need to chop it up into little pieces. We need to destroy it. We need to have the attitude that Isaiah had and that he told the Israelites to have. And you will defile your graven images overlaid with silver and your molten images plated with gold. You will scatter them as an impure thing and say to them, be gone. That must be our attitude towards sin, or we're fooling ourselves. This is something that's helped me a lot to grow, and I hope that it can encourage you and help you to grow. And we always leave this as an invitation. You know, I think about that sometimes. It's very rare that anybody responds to an invitation anymore. But it's here. The invitation is open. If you need to respond, don't let anything hold you back. If you need to be baptized, or if you need to come and ask for the prayers of the saints, or to confess an open and public sin, this is always a good opportunity if you want to come as we stand and sing the song of invitation.